Twins Ladies. Tom Osmond here on KLBB. Club 1220. Kyle, good afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you as well.
Seems it's been a while since we've been together on the air.
It has been a little while.
Well, you know, we've had some best-ofs, and we've had a couple different... Tom was here a couple weeks, but you're here. And I've had some tough decisions to make the last few days, and I want to share this with you. What to get you for Christmas? This is our last show before Christmas, and I've done a lot of research on this. I've gotten all the catalogs, all the wish books, and I've circled things that I think that you'd like, things I'd like. And I've narrowed it down to a few different options here, and I have some audio of some products I think that you might like for Christmas. This one being my favorite. My top three favorites. So this is... Well, listen, and then we'll discuss.
All right. Are you bothered by smoke from someone else's cigarette or cigar? Does smoke irritate your eyes? Put an end to this unpleasantness with the amazing new smokeless ashtray by Ronco. The special vacuum system automatically draws in offensive smoke, locking it into the filter chamber where it's trapped. This incredible ashtray actually helps clear the air you breathe. The smokeless ashtrays by Ronco. Great Christmas gifts, and they're only $16.88.
At Payless Fuel Store, Skaggs, Woolworth, Velocity, Payless, Tacoma, Value Giant, Wigwam, and Fred Meyer.
You can smoke your big cigar at a dinner party and no one even can tell. Okay? But the smokeless ashtray, you can be in your car. The kids in the back seat, they're very happy that mom and dad are smoking and there's not even a scent of smoke in the back seat. Okay, this is a good one. Number two. This one, if you don't like that, I got this one for you.
Hey, this Christmas party is getting a little too quiet. I think it's time we liven it up with my favorite Christmas gift, Mr. Microphone.
Hey, what's that?
Well, you set the dial on your FM radio and testing.
I love the radio.
These kids are having a fabulous time with Mr. Microphone, the cordless microphone that actually puts your voice on the radio. There are no attaching wires, so you're free to move around.
My.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
You can broadcast in mono or with stereo radios in stereo.
Yeah.
Professional entertainers use Mr. Microphone for rehearsing. And you can, too. It's practical and great fun for the whole family. And for only $12.88, they really make great Christmas gifts.
The perfect Christmas gift at Walgreens, Woolworth, Wilco, Osco, Venture, Weebolts, Montgomery Ward.
Is it a coincidence that every store this was sold at and went out of business about a decade later? Mr. Microphone.
I can see people having some fun with that, like turning your neighbor's radio to a setting.
You know,
and
it didn't quite work as well as you think it would. There was a Simpsons episode that the whole thing was based on, and it didn't quite work. True confession, this might have been something I was given at one point, because it looks like the perfect gift. And if you move about 3 feet away from your radio, it didn't work quite as well as the hot tub party and the swinging Christmas party that was going on there with the... these really great radio voices over the Mr. Microphone with a big yellow foam microphone. Okay, that's number two. I have one more here. I got to pull it up here. But which one are you sold on now, the smokeless ashtray or the Mr. Microphone?
I'm leaning towards the microphone.
Okay, I might go with that one too. But now, you like the outdoors much?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Well... another gift that might have been in the Osmond household at one point by someone who thought this was a great gift for someone else, not me, even though I ended up taking it because no one wanted it. But let's listen to this one.
It's the fishing invention of the century. There's never been anything like it. Popeil's Pocket Fisherman. Men, women, youngsters can cast almost like experts the very first time. Small enough to fit in glove compartment, backpack, any travel bag, or even in your pocket. And Pocket Fisherman's handle is its own mini tackle box. Flip up the special DuPont nylon rod and you're ready to fish anytime. Even catch big ones like this with heavy test line and your favorite lure and shock absorber. Pocket Fisherman is made with a smooth action Johnson spin casting reel filled with Trilene XL line, and boy does it catch fish. It's the perfect outfit for casting in tight spots. You can even hang it on your belt. Expert or amateur will love Popeil's Pocket Fisherman. It's rod, reel, line, bobber, hook, the whole thing. Yes, it's fishing fun for the whole family and only $19.95. What a gift.
All right. You're driving back from Flashback Twin Cities. You're pretty excited. The lake's on your side. You pull over. Glove compartment, your pocket fisherman. You are catching walleye. within minutes.
Was that just like a really short fishing pole? Or
it's a really short folding fishing pole. Because of this era, no one had cell phones in their pocket. They were able to put things like checkbooks and pocket fishermen on their pockets. It's like a utility belt. Little side story, this was given as a gift to someone in the Osmond household many years ago. And then it was one of those questions where, whoever got that, where did it come from? And so you discovered, like, in the closet or in the corner of the garage, because no one actually wanted to admit that they didn't want to use a pocket fisherman. You don't give a pocket fisherman to someone who probably spent $100 on a reel. You might, but they may not use it. So I do have the pocket fisherman, and perhaps maybe next summer I may test it out and see if I can catch the large fish. The fish the kids are catching are about as big as the kids, and we can test the pocket fisherman and see if it actually works. It is close to Christmas time, and I know that a lot of us close to Christmas start thinking about, you know, what we're thankful for, you know, what's really important. And we have an author on today named Josie Robinson, and she wrote a book called The Gratitude Jar. And we're going to have Josie on, talk a little bit about her journey writing this book. It's actually a great, great gift. It's about 108 pages. You can read this in a couple hours or a little bit each night. We're going to have Josie Robinson here on Flashback Twin Cities after this break here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond. Guest today, Josie Robinson. She's an author. It's The Gratitude Jar. And normally in Flashback Twin Cities, we discuss the past, but I'm always welcoming having new authors on the show. And also, any type of book, it comes from past experience and, you know, our own. One thing about Flashback Twin Cities is always about history and about our own personal experience we have. And that's why I have Josie on today. Josie, your book is called The Gratitude Jar. And this is your first book that you've written, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell me a little bit about the journey. I know you were one day decided to just start this process. Well, actually, back up here. Tell us what the Gratitude Jar is.
Sure. The heart of the story really is my 4-year-old son, Lucas, and I, for 30 days, we kept a gratitude jar. And for those of you who don't know what that is, basically every night before Lucas would go to bed, we would sit and talk about things that we were grateful for. And then we would write down what we were most grateful for, and we would put it into our jar. And so for 30 days we did this, and I recorded all of our conversations while we did this. And besides the fact that it was really sweet, you know, my 4-year-old said a lot of really sweet things that he was thankful for. The whole experience really transformed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's take a step back here. You decided to record this and decided to keep record of this. What inspired you to do that? Because I know people with kids and they do cute things, but unfortunately not often enough. People don't record them enough. I'm one to record everything. But what made you decide to, was there one moment in particular that something that he did and you thought, this is something I want to capture, or is this something I want to keep seeing how this goes?
I got the idea for the gratitude jar from a healer in Seattle named Malia Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's the one who gave me the original idea to do the gratitude jar, and she was the one who actually suggested recording it. It's not something I ever thought of doing myself, but I'm so glad that I did. Mm-hmm. It's so nice to have those memories preserved. Because, you know, if you're a parent, like, you're just kind of trying to get through the day, and every now and then you take the picture and, you know, post it, but to actually sit and record things is not something that I would ever think of. And I'm so glad that I did, because that it's just a really special moment in time. And it's also preserved now in the book, which is really cool.
Well, plus sometimes when we record things, we lose sometimes a bit of the truism, which is what it is. So if I'm trying to stage something and record a picture and we have to pose for it, you're losing a little bit of what the actual moment is, because people actually feel a little bit different when you actually think they're being recorded than not. With a 4-year-old, 4-year-olds actually have the advantage of not having full understanding of what reality from actual record is.
Mm-hmm.
But you decided to start recording it with an audio recorder, correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, which is a novel thing nowadays. People don't have a lot of audio recording devices now. It's mostly from their phones or computer, digital cameras. But you decided to record what he was saying. Tell us a little bit about those first couple gratitude moments.
Sure. At first it was, you know, Lucas being four, he didn't quite understand what gratitude was, you know, so I was had to explain that to him, you know, being thankful and saying thanks, and he was kind of nervous at first to do it, and so was I, because I really wasn't used to practicing gratitude. As I mentioned in the book, I was somebody who kind of went through the day and just focused on the things that made me irritated for the most part.
Which we all do.
Right, it's human nature. And so to actually go through my day and look for things to be grateful for was a shift for me too. And so the greatest thing about recording it was that it really just, I mean, it was all real, you know? I mean, and I was able to put down the dialogue word for word into the Gratitude Jar book. And so everything that Lucas and I say is, it's what actually happened, you know? And I learned from writing, I think it's really hard to just come up with dialogue artificially, and so...
it's amazing how they do it on TV every week, right?
It really is.
Brilliant dialogue.
It really is. I have a new respect for writers who do that on a regular basis.
Well, so much writing comes from inspiration, comes from true life. Even fictional writing comes from true life. And so you record this, and you still didn't have a plan to write a book about it. You're just recording it for your own record, or your own kind of satisfaction, your own maybe even entertainment afterward. At what point, then, did you decide, you know what, I have all these recordings now, I want to create a product with it, or I want to create, did you have the idea that you were going to do the book all along, or did this kind of happen after you had these collections of recordings?
Well, you know, I had the idea initially right away that I was probably going to write about it because I knew it was going to be a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, to just preserve the moment in time, you know.
So maybe a personal book, not so much one that you're going to share with others.
Right. But as I started going through these 30 days of gratitude and all these miraculous things started happening within my life, like... you know, I've been struggling in a lot of areas, you know, with like money, depression, things like that. And all those things sort of just started to fall away, you know, and money started coming in instead of leaving. And I started feeling happy and peaceful and just lots of really great things started happening. And I realized it was because of this gratitude practice we were doing. And so the book is the story of the gratitude jar, but then it's also there's the how to bring more gratitude into your life and transform your own life.
Mm-hmm. So just to kind of go back here, our guest today is Josie Robinson. She is the author of The Gratitude Jar, A Simple Guide to Creating Miracles. And this actually is my first Christmas present of 2014 to Josie. And she's given me my own autographed copy of The Gratitude Jar, which I've actually had the opportunity to skim part of it. Your website, is that correct? It is?
Yeah. The website is gratitudejarnow.com.
Gratitudejarnow.com. Mm-hmm. Much like tcmedianow.com.
Right. Now great minds think alike.
That's correct. and I don't want to dawn on this too much, but... The Gratitude Jar was essentially a product of your own... I'm assuming you weren't feeling grateful for the world, because a lot of times we go through the day, and it's never enough. And the more we get, the more we feel like we don't have enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think about many years ago when I made much less, you know, much less money. I work at the mill all week long. But when I worked, made, you know, very little money, and somehow I was able to find a way to live. But you're always upset that you don't have this much more.
Mm-hmm.
There's that 5%, that 10% you want more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what a lot of people, especially people of our generation, get caught into.
Absolutely.
Overextended mortgages, credit card bills, the twisting your arm of, you know, going out, staying in, what can you do? I want a new phone. It can be a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we make it a lot because we do it to ourselves.
Totally.
You took us to a very simple, basic level and looked upon yourself and what's grateful. What did you find surprising that you didn't realize how grateful you were until you wrote this?
Well, the thing that surprised me the most, which I talk about in the book, is it was really ordinary day-to-day things that I found to be the most grateful for. Things like, you know, my health, or like the sun, or birds, you know what I mean, birds chirping, or the fact that I live in a country where things were plentiful, and really normal, ordinary things that I never really noticed before, but I realized I've been taking for granted for a really long time. And so, you know, you would think it would be those big moments that you find the biggest gratitude, but it's really your small day-to-day moments where the biggest gratitudes are.
And what did you learn about did your motherhood relationship change with your son through this?
Yes.
About that a little bit.
Well, to be honest, originally, the idea for the gratitude jar, Malia originally suggested, you know, should keep a gratitude jar for my own, you know, doing, basically, you know. And I had the idea, of doing it with Lucas, because at the time I had just had my second child, Davis, and as what happens sometimes when you have your second kid, the first kid kind of gets pushed to the side. And so I just hadn't been spending a lot of time with Lucas, and I felt like I needed a way to connect with him. And so when Malia suggested doing the gratitude jar, I thought it would be an awesome way for me and Lucas to connect with one another. And so that was sort of my original reason for doing this gratitude jar. Not really thinking about the gratitude practice itself, but just thinking about connecting with my four-year-old. And so as we went through it, I found that our relationship improved dramatically, partly because, you know, as a mom, sometimes I have the tendency to focus on, like, the negatives of my kids and how, you know, the tantrums, the screaming, the running around, the jumping off of furniture, you know, the crazy stuff, and I'd be focusing on that. And then once I started practicing gratitude, I started seeing the really awesome stuff about my kids and then noticing just those good things about them. And I noticed that my relationships with them and with, you know, Sean, my husband, and my friend, like, everybody around me improved because I started being grateful for the good things about them as opposed to focusing on the things that irritated me.
And this is stuck. So right now, when did you start writing this book? What time was it? Was it 2 years ago you started?
2 years ago, yeah, 2 years ago.
So in this two years time span, what do you think has changed most about you? Has this effect stuck with you, or do you find yourself slipping back into the negative?
You know, that's a good question, actually. I actually, now I'd say, like, my default setting is just being in gratitude and feeling like I'm flowing with life and happy and having inner peace like I didn't have before. It's sort of my natural state. But like a few weeks ago, I had one of those days. You know those days where things just like start out irritating, you know, like you know.
Like 6 month spans, but yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like trip over something and then you get in your car and start and then, you know what I mean? It just sort of like you're just irritated. And so I had one of those days where just kind of one thing after another kept happening and I felt myself just being really irritated and starting to get into that mindset of like, you know, like the world's bugging me. And I realized that was the first time I'd felt like that in a really, really long time. And that I used to actually feel like that
every day,
every single day. And so that moment made me realize how much better I'd been feeling because of practicing gratitude.
There's people, and I'm sure you've experienced this, and I'm sure Clive experiences, there's people in the world that no matter what happens to them, they're always really positive and happy. And I'm grateful for knowing see those people in my life. And it does rub off, because it's tough to really be angry, irritable, and sharp patient with someone who's being so kind to you. Have you found, for example, in your marriage or with even your close friends, that your relationships have changed just based on, you know, how you've approached gratitude now more so than you did 2 years ago?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, people have actually, I would say, comment on it now.
What's changed with you?
Yeah, like some, like I write about
did
that.
Did you get
in the
a haircut?
Book, actually.
Did you?
Like something. My friend Melanie and I, you know, when I first started doing this gratitude thing, 2 weeks after we started doing, we went out for like a mom's night out, and she, in the middle of our conversation, was like, "What's going on with you? Like something's different with you." And she had to think for a while of what it was, and she was like, "You just seem really happy, you know, and content." And I was like, "Oh, you know," because I really hadn't been for a long time, to be honest with you. And so that's something that people keep commenting on. It's just like, oh, you just seem really happy and you seem like you have a glow and you seem, you know, and I didn't really ever get those comments before.
There's going to be skeptics, and myself sometimes included in this, of the, you know, the spiritual new age in a way of healing.
Sure, sure.
Now, we're not talking about lighting candles and doing rituals
here.
So tell me a little bit about what the actual jar itself is, because I'm thinking to myself right now, I'm thinking of a ball jar right now, a canning jar that I, you know, put tomatoes in right now, and I'm putting my gratitude into it with a piece of paper. Tell me about what that process is.
Well, it's funny because our gratitude jar actually was an old Star Wars Easter basket.
Well, I'm down now.
So,
I'm sold.
You're in. You know, I was collecting dust in our storage room, and I was like, oh, that, you know, that could work. Still is our gratitude jar, actually. We still do it.
I have a Happy Meal bucket, I think, at home
you
right
totally
now.
Use,
I can
yeah,
totally use it.
That's
right.
Perfect. Yeah. That's the point. It could be anything. It doesn't have to be an actual jar. Just whatever you have laying around, you know. But the process is really simple. It's just at the end of the day, or some people who have read the book have told me they do it at the beginning of the day to start their day. It's just a matter of thinking about what you're grateful for going through your day or thinking about your life and then writing it down and putting it into your jar, whatever that may be, and then sharing it with somebody else. And so in the book I talk about you can do it by yourself, that you'll still have the same amazing effects from practicing gratitude, but when there's a Swedish proverb that says happiness shared is happiness doubled, and that's what happens when you practice gratitude with somebody else. It just really enhances the benefits.
So is the book more text instruction, or is it more on your journey?
You know, it's funny. When I first started writing it, I was going to write it more like textbooky, you mm-hmm. know, because that's just sort of
You're an educator by background.
Yeah, I am. I mean, that's my comfort zone. But when I started writing it, it turned into sort of more of a memoir. So the bulk of the book is the memoir of, you know, how it came to be, how it, the transformation that happened, and me and Lucas and our 30 days of gratitude. And then there's the how-to section of mm-hmm. how to do it. And then I also have a few other gratitude practices that you can do also.
GratitudeJarNow.com, correct?
Or is it GratitudeJarNow.com,
yes. A Simple Guide to Creating Miracles. You are an educator by... you were a high school counselor, correct?
Yes.
And
yep.
you also work with kids with working on careers. I'm guessing you have experienced in your career a lot of times kids, and I say the term kids loosely, and other young adults, but they can't do something, or they feel that I can't do that. I'm not cut out for that. I'm not smart enough to do that. You were not a professional writer.
No.
And Josie and I know each other pretty well, but from what I understand, I don't recall you ever having a manuscript or any kind of paper that I've ever read, you had a blog for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of having to give the same advice you give out. You can do anything. And you wanted this book, and now it's written. Mm-hmm. Was there ever points during the process like, no, I'm not a writer. I can't do it. Just throw the whole thing down. Because I think that a lot of people that go through these processes and they get inspired to do something, and this is, by the way, a much different show we're usually used to doing here, but they don't think they're smart enough to do it. They don't think they can do it. It's overwhelming. And you did it. And did you feel along the way a couple times where, nope, I can't do it, but what drove you to keep doing it?
Yeah, well, I definitely was plagued by insecurity writing it, because I'm, you know, this is my first book. I had never written anything before. I wrote as a kid. I was always a kid writing stories, but really, you know, it wasn't something I ever pursued.
You're not an attention seeker. You're not one to go on stage. I've not seen
no.
you at Acme Night
no.
5 minutes of amateur night. No, it's a big deal to be able to put yourself out there.
For me, and I do still feel, before it's released, leading up to it, I had, like, major anxiety before it was coming up, because it is a memoir, and I do get into some personal details that not a lot of people knew about me. My friends who had read this were like, we didn't know any of this was going on with you. How come you never told us? And so it is hard putting yourself out there, but at the end of the day, I really believe in the message and that has the power to help people. So I had to kind of put that aside and just go through with it. But the thing that got me through it really, and as I was writing, I didn't share it with anybody. I mean, Sean didn't even read it. Nobody really knew about it. It wasn't until Emma, my sister-in-law, mm-hmm. found out about it. And Emma, you know her. She's persistent. She's a persistent person, and she's also really into, you know, self-growth and all mm-hmm. that kinds of stuff. And she was like, I have to read your book, you know? Just let me see it. And I'm like, well, it's not done, you know? I was really nervous about showing it to people without it being polished and, you know, done and all that stuff. She was like, no, you need to let me see it. And so
a hard thing to do is to come back to defeat is you have a project that you kind of announce prematurely, and the hardest part is coming back to people you know and you care and respect for, and then what happened to that project?
I
don't know. It's on the shelf, and I'm guilty of that myself. But I recall knowing maybe about 6 months ago, I have this book thing, like...
Right, like, what?
Well, okay.
Yeah, I kept it under wraps.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing, I didn't want to be the person who was like, well, I'm working on my book, and it never came to fruition, you know? Because
then you become the person working on the book for 10 years.
I've become
the person right.
perpetually
right.
working on their book, you know, and I didn't want to do that. And so I really did keep it under wraps mm-hmm. from almost everybody. But Emma caught wind of it, because, you know, she's Emma, and she's very close to me, and so I just printed out some of the book, and I let her read it.
Hmm.
And this was at a point where I was like, you know, am I really, who's going to read this book? You know what I mean? And so she read it, and she was like, oh, Josie, this is just wonderful. You know, she's like, this is going to ignite, and I want more of it. I want to read the rest of it, you know?
There's a lot of books out there, and I'm putting you on the spot here for a second, a tough question now. There's mm-hmm. a lot of books out there. There's no still shortage of bookstores and Amazon and a lot of books out there. What are you going to tell someone? And they say, well, why your book? What do you tell them?
Oh, mine actually works. I mean,
well, there you go.
I'm just going to tell you. So to finish my story about Emma then, right? Okay, so she... Emma, you know, I'm just going to disclose some stuff about Emma now. She's okay with me talking about this, but she'd been kind of drifting for a while, to be honest with you. Not really, couldn't really find a stable job. You know, money wasn't coming in. And she's a really artistic, creative person, and she just wasn't really...
She's in the same position many people in their 20s are right now.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, we're not in a world right now where... You know, you graduate college, and the job market is not made for you. It's a lot of struggle, and this is a generational shift, I think, from people that the baby boom generation, even Generation Xers, that came out of college with people recruiting you to come work at a company or finding your place in the world. And right now, I think that the Generation Y is having a struggling time with higher bills. And more rejection coming out. You go your whole life through education, and then you get rejected. Not to divert you here, but I think that's where Emma here, a mid-20s young lady with a very good education, comes out. And what's for me? And why am I being rejected from the world?
Well, you know, also just extremely talented, extremely ambitious, and just the opportunities in there. And I think a lot of Gen Yers feel that way of like, oh, I have so much to give. I've got these amazing... talents, but yet there's just no opportunity, and they don't want to do the classic, like, you know, like the 9-to-5 desk job or the job that doesn't bring them that meaning, you know. Yeah. And so she was just sort of feeling like she was drifting, and every time we'd get together, I was like, Emma, you know, what's going on, what's new? And she'd be like, you know, nothing much. Same old, same old. And I could see, you know, she's somebody who's full of light and full of fire, and I could just see, like, the light was just starting to turn on. It was getting really dim. And so anyway, so she read this, you know, the early copy of the book, and started doing the gratitude jar practice that I have in the book. And literally, like, things just started getting amazingly awesome in her life. I mean, you know, like all these amazing opportunities, these amazing clients started coming into her life. She's starting her own business. Her money, like, quadrupled significantly. She's moving her dream home, like, in a week. And her photography is getting recognition. Sort of everywhere she'd been stuck, it just kind of got unstuck, and she started to flow. And we were talking about it later, and I was like, Emma, I'm like, you've had just, like, your year's been gangbusters, you know? Like, wow, like, what happened? And she's like, Josie, she's like, this has been the most extraordinary, you know, 6 months of my life, and so many amazing opportunities have come my way. And when I look back at the single thing that triggered it, it was reading your book and doing the gratitude jar practice in it. And I was like, well, that's awesome.
So it works. Answer my question. It works.
It works.
It is also a short read, so it's 108 pages. I was talking to Josie before the show started that 120, apologize.
It's okay.
That we live in a world now of very short attention spans, and I think that especially younger readers now, if it's not moving or glowing, it's tough to get someone to read. It's a great by-the-bedside book.
Yep.
You have an event tonight.
I do have an event tonight. My book launch
party is tonight. At?
Everybody's invited. The Como Park Grill in St. Paul, and it's from 7 to 9.
So you can buy the book there, or if you have bought the book already and you have it, you can bring it and you will autograph
it. Sign it, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And today is like the official launch. This is your first this is your first media appearance and your first launch day.
Totally, okay,
I feel kind of excited that I'm the first media appearance. Kyle, let's take a quick break. We'll come back here with Josie Robinson. She's the author of The Gratitude Jar. Talk a little more about the book journey and what's next for Josie, and maybe even some more Christmas audio here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest today, Josie Robinson. She's the author of The Gratitude Jar. And I want to take a quick pivot here to a little lighter topic. It's Christmas is coming up in a few days. And, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV, a lot of, you know, new TV. I'm usually watching tapes of old TV, which people provide through tcmedianow.com. But I wanted to kind of look through a list here that I found. This is from RetroJunk.com. They do a great job of finding old tapes and old video. It is the worst Christmas specials of all time. It wouldn't be too much fun to do the best ones. I found the worst ones. And I want to read a list of ones of them here. Number 16. This is the 16 worst. It's called Santa Claus. It is a Mexican kids movie that the Mr. Shine's theater crew riffed on a few years back. And it looks like the... and I did see this, but Santa Claus has to defeat the devil... wearing his best Red Devil spray paint costume. And if you like dubbed Christmas movies, I've seen it actually on UHF TV here late at night. It's out there. Number 15, He-Man and She-Ra, a Christmas special. This actually happened. It's not as bad as many have said, but it doesn't follow much about Christmas. Orko goes to a spaceship that He-Man and Man-at-Arms made to spy on Skeletor and crashes to Earth, where he sees two lost children named Miguel and Alicia getting a Christmas tree. And obviously Skeletor had a medal with it, so Skeletor finds a true meaning of Christmas. It happened. This is one thing you'd want to have. Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July. You know, there's some special films that if you've seen in a minute and then want to change the channel, well, this is one of them. Having Frosty in a special, great. Having Rudolph in a special, great. Having both in a special in July, not so great. Rudolph has to lie to protect Frosty, and once Rudolph tells Frosty and Lane Lorraine the truth, Winterbolt takes Frosty's hat, making him just a simple snowman, and Rudolph gets his red nose glow back, and Frosty comes back to life. You can tell this was magic. This is one I like. Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Well, if you like Pia Zadora, you'll like her in Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. The Martians decide that their children need some fun, so they capture the real Santa Claus and two children. It just gets worse with all the toys flying all over the place. And there is a Martian called Droppo. Number 12, Tiny Christmas Tales. Compared to the Christmas specials, this one is just dull. Cecil Snowman eating the 6 days of Christmas, loud neckties that are wreaths, Eugene who loves not like Christmas but has a giant mouth. You get the picture. Rudolph's Shiny New Year. He's hanging out with Baby New Year in a big top hat. It really isn't a Christmas special. It's a New Year's Day special because you got to cash in on that New Year's Day crowd, mm-hmm. too. We've done Rudolph and Charlie Brown now that Rudolph needs to pop open for New Year's. Mm-hmm. Happy the baby runs or crawls away because he has huge ears that he decides to hide under his hat. Father Time gets Rudolph to find Happy the Baby. Otherwise, the year will just continue. And on the way, we see a caveman, a knight in rusty armor, and Benjamin Franklin. And now you know why we don't have New Year specials. Number 10, Christmas Again, Charlie Brown. You thought that Charlie Brown Christmas was great? Well, let's do a sequel. Good grief. Do we need a watered-down Peanuts Christmas special? Charlie Brown tries to sell wreaths. Snoopy honks at everyone. Pepper and Patty's wearing shorts and sandals when it's snowing. And Sally yells out, hockey stick. Many say, I want a dog for Christmas, Charlie Brown. It was a lousy special for Peanuts. It's okay, but it's Christmas time again, Charlie Brown. Sure takes the cake. There you go. Christmas with the Cranks. This is a movie. Mm-hmm. This is one of Josie's favorite movies, I think.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Luther Crank and Nora Crank, Tim Allen and Jamie Lee Curtis, decide their daughter Blair is going to prove for Christmas with the Peace Corps. Since the Crank's daughter won't be home, they decide to skip Christmas and go on a cruise. But when the neighbor sees that they're avoiding Christmas, they become annoying. There you go. Miracle on 34th Street. This is a John Hughes production, and seems to be a good one, having Santa fall down, reindeer in the courtroom, and Susan Walker waiting for her future brother that just falls flat. Here's another perfect one. Film in Minneapolis. Jingle All the Way. If you think Sinbad and Arnold Schwarzenegger teaming up will bring Christmas magic, well, you're wrong. Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Howard Langston, a father who works a lot and wishes to make his son happy, so he tries to buy the hottest toy of the year, Turbo Man. Ted Maltin, Phil Hartman, and the Malum Myron LaBrie, Sinbad, try to one-up Langston, but Langston does become Turbo Man. Yeah, we're going to skip a few of these because I have my favorite one
that
down here.
That would seem like a good idea, though, Tom.
It did seem like a good idea. Really. All right. The Star Wars Holiday Special, we played audio this a couple years ago, so I'm not going to torture anyone with that. But Chewbacca wants to see his family for Light Day, and Darth Vader has to meddle again. B. Arthur has a musical montage when she closes the bar, the cantina. Harvey Korman has dressed like a woman. The Jefferson Starship has a cameo that's as hokey as We Built the City, and it's so bad. George Lucas has the original in his basement, and he said he'd rather break every copy than ever release it officially. Unless people like me who have a copy of it have tortured their friends with it over the years. Okay. That is some of the worst Christmas specials.
We can play that at the launch party tonight, maybe, the audio.
You want to sell books, Josie, not have people run away. It's one of those things where we have a movie now, The Interview, that I have a prediction is going to be the biggest release of all time when it's out because it's not my kind of movie, but I think when it comes out, people are going to be clamoring for it. It's like the holiday special. It was forbidden and banned for years until the internet came out and people started, selling their copies. And I got, when I was a young man a copy of this, and I thought it was quite ingenious to have this bootleg copy of a Star Wars video no one had ever seen. And then I watched it, and I wish I had not seen it. I kind of wanted to cleanse the eyes a bit. Have you seen this Star Wars holiday special?
I have not, but I remember you playing the audio a couple times.
If I scared you away, good, because you want to avoid it. I can't do it this year. Okay, it's Christmas time, and we're all going to get our copy of The Gratitude Jar by Josie Robinson. The gratitudejarnow.com.
Yes.
And you're on Twitter and Instagram, correct?
Yes, I am Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
The handle is?
Let's see. On Twitter, it's at Gratitude Jar.
Okay.
Instagram, it's My Gratitude Jar. Facebook, it's Gratitude Jar Now.
For a few days before Christmas, tell us how we can use a gratitude jar with the holidays.
Sure. Well, if you're giving it as a gift, I've got a few gift ideas for you that make it just a little bit extra special. So, you know, the book itself that we have it here in front of, it's actually a really beautiful book. The design's really, really beautiful. So it makes a really nice gift book. But to elevate it to a really nice level to give as a gift to somebody, like I said, the practice of the book is really to 30 days of gratitude, you know, have a jar and have some slips of paper and write, you know, your 30 days of gratitude. So the first way you could do a gift is a copy of the book along with like a little jar that you could get from Target or from World Market. They've got cute little ones. They're inexpensive. And you could fill it with 30 blank slips of paper. And just put it in a nice gift bag, and it would be a nice gift for somebody who would want to do the practice. A variation of that is you have the same jar with the slips of paper, but for the person that you're giving the gift to, you could write on those slips of paper the reasons why you're grateful to them. So, you know, I'm grateful for you, Tom, because you're having me on your show right now, and you're just such a great friend. You know, just things like that, special memories that you have with the mm-hmm. person. And then the third thing you could do, instead of having in lieu of the jar, you could write a letter of gratitude on like a nice sheet of paper and then put it in the book. And actually, one of the teachers that I work with, he bought a copy of the book for his grandmother, who's really special to him. And he's actually going to hide his letter of gratitude in the book. So then while she's reading it, she'll stumble across it and read it.
And you can buy it on Amazon, too, correct?
Yeah, okay. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. The iBook store, it's everywhere.
And you can buy it tonight.
Yep.
What question I have about the book, and actually about yourself now, do you still record the way you did before? You recorded 30 Days of Gratitude, and now your mind is set on your book, and your mind is set on explaining the practice mm-hmm. of this. Are you still recording as much as you did? Because it's a tough discipline.
It is. It really is. No, I only have those original 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
We still write our gratitudes down.
That's, I mean, recording by writing, Joseph. Right.
We do, yes. Because I do, like I say in the book, I do feel like writing it down is a really important part of mm-hmm. the process. You know, when you make it physical, it goes out into the world and just makes it that much more powerful. But yeah, Lucas and I still do our gratitude jar in the 30 days leading up to Christmas and the 30 days leading up to Easter. That's our family routine now. But we always write it down and put it. So our Star Wars Easter basket's overflowing with gratitudes at this point, but
and plastic eggs.
Yeah, right.
And tell me about the healer. I don't know if she's a healer or what is her?
Yeah, she's like a spiritual intuitive. That's probably which I was sort of, you know.
Was she a bit surprised you came back for her and said, "Hey, by the way, you gave me this advice, and now I have a book."
She was thrilled when she had no clue that because I didn't tell her that mm-hmm. I was doing this book either. That our I only had two sessions with her and. You know, we hadn't talked for a really long time. Right. And so anyway, so I reached out to her after like a year mm-hmm. after writing this book and was like, "Hey, just wanted to let you know I'm publishing this book." And she was thrilled. And she actually was really excited about it and started the Gratitude Jar practice with her fiancé. And they have actually a Star Wars, not a Star Wars Easter basket, but it's like a little Star Wars cup that they use for their
gratitude. But you don't have to use a Star Wars
you
branded
item.
You do not
item. Have
okay,
to use
good.
A Star Wars... anything.
Occasionally
no.
We blend a little Star Wars into this show.
I should.
And by the way, again, I mentioned this before, and I want to say it again because we do have some time here.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, people like me, and we've had this conversation here on off microphone before. The question is, you know, do we believe in, you know, what do we believe in, and is mm-hmm. there forces that are beyond our control, and what can we do in our minds to be able to change these things? And I think that mm-hmm. this is not. There's no. you know, there's no magic to this. This is really an attitude change. It's really a discipline and attitude change that, like working out and healing your body every day for a few minutes. This is a mind, you know, a mind discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of us, especially in the new year, you see a lot of commercials, and trust me, donations of tapes I get every year, I get about 40 or 50 exercise videos every year. People buy them, and they want to, I'm going to do my 8-minute abs, I'm going to do my Jazzercise. Last night I was going to some tapes, as you do on a Friday night, and I found a Richard Simmons anti-Jazzercise tape. So someone is really into this early 80s workout routine. But we oftentimes don't enough really work on our mind fitness. It's all about our bodies sometimes, and I think that this is a great simple thing. The thing about exercise that people don't like doing, they don't like going out there, it's boring. But with my, you know, with healing your mind, it's the same thing. It's tough, it's scary. You think that you go down a path, you're going to be in a path you don't want to be in. This is a real simple.
Really simple, and really only takes like a couple minutes a day to do. And there's actually been a lot of research into gratitude recently, where they've demonstrated huge benefits from people who've been practicing gratitude after just a few short weeks. People's happiness levels raised by 25%. People, you know, report feeling the relationships are better, you know, reporting feeling they're sleeping better, their health is better. Just huge significant changes after just a few weeks of practicing gratitude. So there's actually a you know, research into that this actually works. And like I said, it's really simple to do. It's a couple minutes, but it just this. I think we get hung up on the fact that we have to make these huge changes to have big results. But really, it's those small changes that lead to the biggest results.
You know, because part of a diet is I don't want to give up sugar, okay? And then you come to exercise of mind, I want to give up negativity. But it's a very liberating feeling, I can imagine.
Oh, it's. Well, yeah, it absolutely is. But we're conditioned to be negative, you know. We're conditioned to be that way.
And you're not going to cleanse your mind from all negativity, because much like in exercise, I think that anyone who's been on a diet realizes that you're never going to stay on a diet if you give up something totally. Mm-hmm. If you like Italian food, you're never going to give it up totally. If you like ice cream, if you're never going to eat it again, it's not going to work out for you. And I'm guessing with this, you do have to balance out the negative parts in your life with this gratitude. And that's why, and again, I am going to read this from cover to cover. I've skimmed it preparing for the show here, and I'm really looking forward to, because the book wasn't out until just a few days ago. So
totally,
I'm
yep,
looking forward to reading this. And again, at the Como
Park Grill in St. Paul.
And the cost is for the book is?
It's $17.99.
Okay.
But if you buy it, I think it's on sale right now on Amazon for like $16 or something like that.
And you will sign up for free tonight at
absolutely.
I will be there. I will offer to wrap the gratitude jar with my wrapping skills.
That'd be great.
For a drink. Or a quarter, okay?
Oh,
and
okay.
I'll tell you what, the
good
it's
deal.
It's oh well, you know. I used to volunteer to do this senior day shopping at this place I worked at, and they always put me in gift wrap, and I kept telling them, I'm the worst gift wrapper in the world. I'm a gift bag guy. And I used the same gift bag 3 years. I recycled the same bag. I just tear the tag off and give it to someone.
Right.
But, it just was not good, and they kept putting me in gift wrap. I don't know why they did that. And so that's why I'm offering these services to, you know, Macy's and Marshall Fields gave up all their award-winning gift wrappers. It's a lost art. And
it is a lost art.
I may try to revive that tonight. Josie Robinson, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, it's gratitudejarnow.com. Mm-hmm. You can follow Josie on Twitter. You can follow Josie on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
At the Como Grill tonight, $17.99. You can buy it tonight at the event, or you can buy it on Amazon if you can't make it out tonight. But it should be a good night. It's going to be a mild night tonight. It's going to be a nice night to see the Christmas lights, take a stroll down through St. Paul, and you know, really feel. I think last year we were kind of we didn't get that feeling of Christmas because we were just, you know, hiding in our homes.
Yeah,
it was so bitterly cold. I want to play, before we close the show today, Kyle, I have my favorite Christmas special, which is one that you'd be surprised. It's not one that gets a lot of airtime. I think they still play it on, you know, ABC Family Part 3. But it's, and Stan was playing some great Christmas music before. It's 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. It was a special which had very little to do with the poem. But it was a special about some mice that decided to, they wrote Santa a letter asking him to come and bring presents to all the humans that they were living with. And it's a bit of a hokey song, much like the ones I was telling you guys about in the 16 worst Christmas specials of all time. But it's one that makes me smile at my gratitude or everything about the year. So So as my last kind of audio bit here of the year, I'm going to play Christmas Chimes Are Calling Santa, and then we'll leave it at that. So here we go.
Christmas chimes are calling, Santa, Santa, every heart recalls.